Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
Well, hello, everybody. I want to thank you for joining me today. I have a very interesting show that I'm going to be presenting because September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. I am going to be featuring a doctor and a patient that has written a fabulous book with a fabulous name called Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers, really very appropriate for it being September being Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. Every year, nearly 200,000 men in the United States are actually diagnosed with prostate cancer. And as with women, most of them, when they're diagnosed, suddenly get this terrifying feeling in their stomach with this knot and everything, and this impression that what this is really doing is it's really giving them kind of a death sentence. They don't realize that the form of cancer, of prostate cancer, is actually different than other cancers. We're going to be talking about that, and that in reality, about only one out of seven men with this disease, perhaps 15%, are truly at risk of being involved in this life-threatening illness itself. Yet, even knowing this, I mean, I'm going to share, and so are the doctor and Ralph are going to share their perception of all of this, even knowing that prostate cancer is different than other cancers, and then also knowing that the risk of it being life-threatening is really minimal. Once a man hears those words, you have prostate cancer, it literally leaves them in shock and wondering, are they going to lose their sexual functioning? Are they going to be able to, you know, have to deal with incontinence? Are they going to be able to continue to live a normal, healthy life? And all of the research that's been done, and all of you know through who I am and the work that I do, I found that there's so much research that's out there that has a lot of information associated with it, but it doesn't give men hope. It's just really information, a lot of times statistics. And one of the reasons, not only with the title, was I so intrigued with this book, but what I found is reading this book is it was a wonderful approach from both a patient's perspective and a doctor's perspective. I also found that it was a holistic approach to being able to look at what are the options that a man has should they be diagnosed with prostate cancer. And the thing I, when I finally got through with the book, that was so heartfelt to me and the work that I do, and I know you're going to enjoy both of these gentlemen as we're talking to them, is this book gives men hope. It also shares with them new information of how to look at biopsies, look at that surgery that is usually the standard, and to be able to look at this from a holistic standpoint, not only with what's happening in the physical body, but also what can be done in that body-mind connection, what can be done from an alternative approach. And all of you that are my listeners that have been with me for a long time know that I'm not anti-medicine, I'm not anti-pharmaceutical, and I do believe that healing involves creating a team of people, a doctor, holistic practitioners, the patient very much involved in the process, and putting together a real healing team that you can feel very comfortable with, you can trust. So again, as I close this book and getting through it, I thought, oh, this book really sheds new light on everything that we've been hearing about prostate cancer itself. When I went in and I started looking at prostate cancer from my perspective, I found that it really is very understandable why men are so confused when they get confronted with this diagnosis. And part of the reason for that is that there's a lot of partial information and conflicting information. Also, as it stated in the book, there's a penchant for doctors to have that surgery. It seems like that was just kind of the line of thinking when someone was diagnosed with this, and for that matter, when we even looked at many, many of the cancers. But as a matter of fact, what we're finding and what you're going to learn in today's show is that this surgery isn't necessarily what is going to need to have happen. And with the information shared in the book and the research, we're finding that the changing thinking is actually changing around the disease, and that sometimes even prostate cancer shouldn't be called prostate cancer. It really is more of a chronic condition. So I'm going to let the two gentlemen talk to you about that. And then what we're going to do is we're going to approach and hopefully debunk, as we're looking at this, that this surgical approach and kind of that one-size-fits-all treatment isn't necessarily the best way to go. And so with that, I want to tell you a little bit about the authors. Again, the title of the book is Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers. I love the title, both of you. The first person is Ralph Bloom.
Whoa, let me interrupt and say you need to tell them the subtitle as well.
Oh, yes, very good.
That's really important.
The subtitle is No More Necessary Biopsies, Radical Treatment for Loss of Sexual Potency. And what we're really talking about is we're talking about not just this cutting out, but what can we do? Let's look at biopsies. Let's look at the treatments, and that's what we're going to be doing. So thank you very much. So I'd like to introduce, tell you a little bit about both of the authors, and then I'm going to jump in, and I'm just going to have them really kind of guide me where we need to go. I do have some information that I pulled out of it that I'd like to discuss. I have Ralph Bloom. He's a cultural anthropologist and the author, an author that has written many, many books from for various magazines, including The New Yorker, Reader's Digest, Cosmopolitan, and Vogue. He's previously published 3 novels and 5 nonfiction books, has a lot of prolific words within him, a lot of reason to share his information to live. He's been living with prostate cancer without a radical intervention for 20 years. And then I have Dr. Mark Schultz. Dr. Schultz is a board certified in medical and oncology and internal medicine. He's been treating men with prostate cancer exclusively since 1995. He's the medical director of the Prostate Oncology Specialist Incorporated and executive director of the Prostate Cancer Research Institute. Dr. Schultz is an associate clinical professor at the University of Southern California of Medicine's Department of Oncology and a consultant to the Journal of Urology. My goodness, it is a pleasure to, especially in the work that I do, to be able to have doctor, patient, and someone that looks at the healing process and the diagnosing process from a holistic perspective. I hope all of you listeners really realize what a wonderful breakthrough moment this is. Well, thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you, Carol.
Very, very good. What I'd like to do is I would like to probably, let's start out with some basics that I think that, you know, anytime we look at anything that's happening in the physical body, we need to go back to the basics. So, Dr. Schultz, I'm going to start with you from the standpoint, let's go to the basics. Can we talk about what this prostate gland is?
Sure. All men have one, and the ladies don't. It is a small walnut-sized gland that makes semen, and it creates problems as we get older, and the incidence of cancer, as we all know, is very high. Fortunately, cancer of the prostate is different from the other cancers in that it's not nearly as life-threatening. Unfortunately, it's located in that extremely sensitive area of the body, making it very difficult to remove without damaging other things like your sex life and your urinary function. So that's the dilemma. Far less dangerous is the cancer, but far more dangerous to treat in terms of your quality of life.
Absolutely. And Ralph, you can certainly attest to that, can't you?
I don't know.
Well, from the standpoint that, you know, when you were faced with this lump that it was found on the prostate gland itself.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! I can.
Well, I was very lucky. I was over the first few years put in the hands of how shall I say? Perhaps inept is the kindest word. urologists. The first one who did a biopsy got what is known in the trade as crush artifact, which means you can't really get a definitive statement or signal as to the condition of the cells. And the second, in Hawaii, a couple of years later, well, actually 9 years later, because I backed off and just thought I'll live with this and see what happens. The second time I had a biopsy, the guy says, you know, if you don't have surgery immediately, you're going to be dead in a year. And I remember thinking, you know, I'd like to see his license for prophecy. But I was sort of annoyed. And the next time I had a biopsy, it was at Cedars-Sinai, and the guy who did it was a sort of one of the big guns in prostate cancer, and he asks me some questions and says, yeah, I've got time in my schedule next Thursday. And I thought, wait a minute. You haven't even done a DRE, which is a not so pleasant event where the guy puts his finger up your butt, but it tells you a lot. You get a sense of what's going on. And I don't know whether he needed to do one or not, but it really irritated me. So at that point, I thought, wow, God is giving me these jerk urologists. And later I thought, no, that's not quite accurate. I've been given the opportunity to do my own research, to really do my own thinking, make decisions. At one point, my PSA, which is one of the pretty standard but soon will be replaced by more sophisticated methods, but for a long time it's been one of the ways to know what was going on. My PSA, it's not supposed to go jumping up. It's supposed to stay pretty well around 4, say, when you're 60 or more than that. And suddenly mine went up to 17. And by then I knew enough to think, wait a minute, something's funny here. So I put myself on a course of Cipro, an antibiotic, and by gosh, the PSA fell back to 5.5. So I began to learn, and as I began to learn, I began to take, not just to be, I don't know what the proactive word is, it sounds like a politically incorrect word to me. I got involved and wanted to know and wanted to ask questions, and when I heard about a particular technology, I would ask the doctor how many times he performed it. I began to be willing to walk out of an office where I didn't feel safe. My wife, Jeannie, who's an acupressurist, was wonderfully supportive all the way along the road. That's one of the big things, to have a loving partner who supports you and is there at your side. I'll say more about her. I didn't say much about her in the book because it's not stuff that guys want to hear. Jeannie is what's called an auricular therapist, auricle being the ear, A-U-R. And she's an acupressurist who treats the entire body through 360 points on the ear. It's amazing. All these energy zones end up in the ear. And she worked on my prostate point every week for 15 years, and sometimes it was so bad that she almost had to throw up. But, you know, this is somehow something guys need to hear because they don't have a genie and they're not going that way, and it's not Medicare anyway, you know. But I have been out in the field. I wrote a lot about things you can try that are out there. Hawaii was a sort of mecca for alternative and complementary. I think those two words need to be distinguished. So I went through a lot of that, and Mark was very patient. He didn't look at the ceiling very often, throw his eyes heavenward, but I didn't tell him a lot either. I trusted him for what he contributed, which was impeccable view of what was going on and what was new and what I needed to know and what I needed to pay attention to. And then I did my own stuff. And here I am.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important point when we're putting together this healing team, is that we really look at what doctors can offer us in the process. Is, you know, they have a tremendous amount of education, they have a tremendous amount of exposure, experience with the different things that they deal with, and one of the great sources that they are, on top of just being able to help give us a holistic perspective of what to look at, is the fact that they can help us really understand what's going on. So many times, and we're going to talk about this later in the show, so many times we get into this awfulizing, as I call it, because we're lacking information. And that's one of the areas that a doctor really is of value. They're skilled in being able to listen to the symptoms and look at the different things, the test results, and to be able to come up with a place to start. And then as you go through there and more unveils itself, then they're able to help you really look at what's really going on in the physical body from that physiology and anatomy standpoint. So very, very valuable. One of the things that I found when I read the book was the fact that in the book it does offer both the physician's position and perspective as well as the patient's. And in order for healing to happen, then the two come together. So, Doctor, one of the things that I, you know through my own experiences. I mean, every female is going to tell you that they have their own experiences, whether it's with a brother or a father or grandfather or even a husband or partner, is that, you know, there's times that there are going to be changes tied to testosterone and just other things. I mean, I found it fascinating. I do want to talk more about this insulin connection and some of the other things that were in the book. But one of the things that I found is that so much emphasis is placed on that PSA. And how, you know, is this the baseline? Is this where we should start?
Well, in my practice, we only treat prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe my practice would exist if it wasn't for the PSA test. The PSA was released by the FDA about 20 years ago. And, of course, it opened up Pandora's box, and we can't close it. The information is useful, but it's not perfect, and it has to be interpreted like any information. So really extreme numbers, really good low ones or extremely bad high ones, give you a fairly clear message. But a lot of people have PSAs that are sort of in between, and you have to use other outside information to get a clear picture of what's going on.
Is that where biopsies come into play?
Sometimes they do. We tend to try and push biopsies more towards the bottom of the list just because they're a little uncomfortable and there are some risks associated with biopsies. But ultimately, if you really need to know, a biopsy is required.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but there are other tests. There's a urine test called PSA3, and you can enhance PSA information by doing it more than once. If you get a sequence of numbers, it's more informative than just a single PSA. And then there are some imaging techniques with MRI and ultrasound. And, of course, the doctor can feel the prostate and determine if it's big or small and if there are any suspicious hard spots. So you can construct a sort of a picture with all that information and then use that to determine if a biopsy is really required or not.
Mm-hmm. It used to be that the biopsies were where they would just go in and take samples from just a very few areas. And now what they've done is that it's evolved to the point where they will go in and take many, many samples from different areas and so forth. And one of the things with the urologist we've worked with, is his comment is, it gives them a better picture overall of what's going on. What is your feeling on that?
The more needle biopsies that they do, they use a grid pattern.
Okay.
Typically, they'll take about 12 biopsies from the prostate. It clearly does improve the quality of the information. We've relied more heavily on fewer biopsies in conjunction with more accurate ultrasound imaging. So rather than doing a grid pattern, we use the imaging to try and find suspicious areas, and then with fewer biopsy cores, perhaps 5 or 6, we can get the same quality or even better information.
Mm-hmm.
I, for instance, would ask any man if he's going to get a biopsy, ask the urologist about having ultrasound so he can see where he is and see what the tissue looks like and make some decisions rather than purely hit and miss. And one of the things it always hits me, guys just don't make the connection. They probably know it if they start to think a urologist is a surgeon. That's what he is. He's a surgeon.
Correct.
And what he does is operate. And once he, I mean, I've been in the presence of guys who were told, you know, we've got cancer in 6 cores here. Your PSA is elevated. I'd certainly recommend surgery, and I'll do it. He doesn't say that, but that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we're coming into that gray area where big business. I mean, I think biopsies are probably a $2 billion a year business. And it isn't to say that people are dishonorable. It's just there's a proclivity to do what, you know, what is that story about it? If you're a nail, a hammer is looking for you, you know. So caution and consideration
and
second opinion.
Exactly, and that's one of the things that, you know, I've always said, and I don't know if I've repeated myself, but if you don't trust the doctor, the pill isn't going to work. And I think in putting together a team of people, it's that aspect of being able to feel comfortable, you know, I mean, I know that those are all words that we would associate kind of with that feminine aspect or that female part, but I think that for a male that isn't inclined to probably talk about things or to maybe emote things or so forth, I think it's really important. And one of the things I know, Doctor, that you had said is that, you know, in your do no harm oath that you take, is that rapport is just absolutely paramount in being able to be a part of the team and not be seen as a, you know, an adversarial situation. I think it, for me personally, excuse me for getting my opinions in this, but I think the word alternative certainly has a lot of value when we're trying to call ourselves something, but I think it also goes in and it pits us against medicine or doctors against anybody that tries anything different. I think this integrative term or complementary certainly fits
yep.
it. And I think that's important for people to, you know, really understand that it's a holism of what we're looking at. And with urologists, you're absolutely accurate, Ralph. That's what they're trained to be. It isn't that they, you know, necessarily have, you know, decided they're going to wake up one day and they're just going to cut out body parts. It's part of the process of what they learn and what they go through.
And they're very proficient at it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I've been thinking in the last few days of putting together a 30-second briefing for guys who don't like going to doctors but have received a prostate cancer diagnosis.
Yes.
And I've just been making some points. The first one would be just stay calm. You will soon discover that there are strategies that you can look into. So at the beginning, do as little as possible. Take a trustworthy person with you to any doctor conference. Take your loved one. Let them take notes. And get away from, and this is a hard one for men. It's what I call the Schwarzkopf effect. You know, diagnosed on Friday, get it out on Monday. Don't try and confuse me with the facts. Active men do not want to live with a cancer in their bodies. We are fixers. We are repairable. Repair that chair so someone can sit on it. You know, let's not talk about damaged chairs. You need to do your homework. You need to, in a way, become a consultant on your own case. You need to look at the alternatives and be aware of what collateral damage, you know, side effects is a nice, polite word that doesn't stain. Try collateral damage. That's what happens. That comes with any form of radical intervention. Get a second opinion. And if you don't like that, get a third opinion. And, you know, if you do decide to select radical treatment, like the new form of surgery, the Da Vinci technique, the robotics, you know, will have you teeing off in a week. Well, before you decide on that, ask the surgeon how many of those procedures he's performed. Some people estimate as high as 100 before you're really good at it. Don't try to convince yourself either that something's going to work. As time goes by, stories change. Already the stats on the Da Vinci technique are worse than the radical prostatectomy, the old style. That's just come into being. So everything gets sold. Everything gets pushed. That's the way we do things. And if you can come to terms, here's the big one for guys. If you can come to terms with, if you have a cancer, Mark will tell you there are three styles of cancer, three degrees, and mine, so far as we know, is the slow one, the tortoise of the cancers. And if you find that you are in that position and you can coexist with that cancer, I'd suggest my mantra is I'm going to die with it, not from it. They've just done some studies of men who were over 80 and were autopsied from natural death, and 100% of them had prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, don't be bullied or embarrassed. Just ask your doctor if this suicidal drug is good for you. You know, the $64 million question is, what is the patient's role in healing or curing?
Absolutely.
That really has to be answered.
Absolutely. And, you know, that part is curing is when we basically go to someone and we say, fix me.
Yeah.
And we certainly have a lot of ways to do that. The healing is where the patient is very, very involved in it. Doctor, would you be comfortable if I called you Mark?
Of course.
Okay, very good. One of the things, Mark, that Ralph just mentioned is the fact of these three different, did you call them levels, Ralph, that you were?
Well, I guess you'd say, what, degrees, Mark? What do you call them?
Oh,
forms of cancer.
Yeah, it helps to remember that prostate cancer is not one illness, even though we call it all by the same name, just
mm-hmm.
to keep everybody off balance and confused. There's a low-risk form that can be safely watched. There's a high-risk form that is best managed with a combination of treatment. And then there's an intermediate, sort of a gray zone like there are in so many things, where people probably need treatment, but some men can be watched. And this is why it's so critical to have good communication between the doctor and the patient, because the impact of treatment mostly hits quality of life. Mortality rates, thank God, from, say, intermediate-risk prostate cancer are in the range of 1 out of 100. So 99 out of 100 men are going to have to live with the consequences of the treatment they pick. And this is why quality of life is so important. This is why a good dialogue between the doctor and the patient is so important, to find out what is the priority for the patient, not the priority for the doctor.
Absolutely. And that's part of the process that you go through. I mean, you certainly have a lot of years of exclusively working on this. I'm sure that your approach has also changed to the point of asking and looking at the quality of life and so forth. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's where prostate cancer is different. With other cancers, if we don't win it on the first battle with the surgery or the radiation, you name the cancer, I mean, colon, pancreas, brain, bone, stomach, they're almost universally fatal if they come back. So this is just not the case with prostate cancer. The vast majority of men that have prostate cancer, and let's say they do have surgery or radiation, and worst case scenario, it does indeed come back. 80% of those men will die and will live a normal life expectancy, even though the cancer came back. So this is a different game than it is with the other cancers. We're not playing quite with the same high stakes that we are, say, with something like colon cancer, where if it comes back, almost all those people, all those unfortunate people, will end up dying of colon cancer.
I think that's a real important point for, you know, a lot of my listeners are female, the majority are, but I think it's important for the female in the role of all this to realize what the doctor just said and the fact that this is a different kind of cancer. And should you be in a situation where your husband or partner has been diagnosed with prostate cancer, realize that we're working with something different. And your approach, your emotionalism, your openness, your ability to dialogue, and like Ralph said, it's very important that you be a part of the team and go and get your own answers. I adore men, but the standpoint from the neurology of my work that I do, men aren't as going to be as open about dialoguing what happened in the doctor's office with a urologist.
Critical that people come in with their friends or their spouses. There's a lot of subtleties in the communication process, and when you have two or three heads, it's always better than just, you know, one person trying to absorb it all.
Well,
I just have a note from an acupuncturist, a woman in Paris, who had just read our book, and she said it was one of. She said women will be reading this book avidly.
Oh,
it's compassionate, user friendly, full of humor and understanding. As a therapist, I'm already quoting from it to my patients. The doctor-patient collaboration is full of heart, never pedantic or preachy. This book is like having a support group of your own. Really
nice. That is absolutely true. And, you know, a thing with women is that we don't like to go in and intervene for a variety of reasons. But if you as a female are dealing with something like this because of the information being partial or mixed messages or what friends talk about or what, you know, and that part where we say, oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe so-and-so had to have this, go and be a part. And the part of the female is ask those questions. And then also the female in her neurology looks for those subtleties to be able to talk to her husband or partner in a way that it grounds it. It's like, okay, I understand this isn't the end of life and so forth. So very, very important. And you're right, the humor, oh my gosh, that was one thing that as a female reading it was the standpoint that it had that male humor where males could relate to it, and it took women out of that emotionalism to the point to realize that this doesn't mean that they're going to, you know, leave you stranded or leave you later on or quickly in life and everything. So it is very, very well written. And I really, for all of the listeners, the name of the book is The Invasion of Prostate Snatcher, of the Prostate Snatchers. I'm going to do it again. Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers, No More Unnecessary Biopsies, Radical Treatments, or Loss of Sexual Potency. One of the things that it is, it's a wonderful blend of both the physician's perspective. That's one of the things that Mark brings to it with his expertise over the time that he's been doing this since 1995. It offers a lot of different approaches. We've touched a little bit on the imaging.
And one thing we haven't mentioned is the issue of belief, which is not optional. It's there from the beginning. Belief in your doctor, in the treatment you choose, and the unshakable belief that recovery is possible, available, and that you can be the agent of that recovery. We've entered this new zone of you know, where body, mind, spirit, the psycho-spiritual model has come into being. And it's really important to see the connection and feel that if you trust God and you figure God's in charge of things, just, you know, call him in for a consultation. I think it was Schweitzer who said once that the doctor of the future will be oneself. Well, whose image are we made in? You know, that healing power is part of our gift. It's what animates us, and it's what animates the mind and the body. Spirit comes in here and needs to be talked for. I didn't talk about it a lot in the book, and I'm feeling a little guilty. But, you know, to live joyfully and to be able to submit yourself to true healing, you need to be thinking of a lot of things that come from spiritual commitment. And the last thing I would love to say, can I say one more thing?
Oh, you sure can. Then we're going to take a quick break.
Right.
We're going to come back, and you know what? Please finish it, but we are going to talk more about this and the importance and all the things that we have as far as tools. So please do finish. And then
why don't I
wait?
No, I think I can wait.
Oh, no, go ahead. We've started.
Well, I was just going to say that here's a basic principle. Fear, which is made up of anger, regret, resentment, etc. Fear cannot coexist with love. The two cannot occupy the same space. The heart must be fear-free for love to be present, to abide, and to flow. And one way to unblock the heart is by practicing forgiveness. Mark chapter 22, I think, talked about how prostate cancer changes your life. Well, I think prostate cancer saved a lot of guys' lives because when they got it, they went and found out that they were really in danger of something else. And I've come to look at prostate cancer as God's gift to my life. And I would not change it or give up these past 20 years for anything.
Well, you know, and I think that's a great point to be made, is that a couple things is that when we are in fear, we're in protection, and when we're in love, we're in thriving. And one of the things that in the work that I do as well is that illness is a great teacher. Everything that was important in your day timer or on your BlackBerry the day before, the minute that you have something that requires you to be present in the moment, all the things that were urgent are no longer important, and then you focus on what's important. Please stay tuned. I'm going to be right back. I'm going to be talking with the authors of the book, The Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers, No More Unnecessary Biopsies, Radical Treatments, or Loss of Sexual Potency. So we're going to be doing that. Excuse me. We'll be right back, and thank you for joining me.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing.
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true, you can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest, you can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show. For the hosts and for others.
Would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.ritberger.com.
Hello, thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Carol Reitberger, and today I've got two very special, very special guests that are talking about prostate cancer and the fact that because you've been diagnosed or someone that you love has been diagnosed with prostate cancer, it doesn't mean that it is a death sentence. New information, new different options to be able to explore. Dr. Mark, as I'm going to call him, has basically been working with exclusively with prostate cancer since 1995. And then we have Ralph Bloom, who has also been living with prostate cancer for 20 years. And this book is absolutely phenomenal. It offers hope. It offers new information. It's a well-rounded perspective of what alternative therapies, what medical therapies are available for men that have been diagnosed with prostate cancer. Again, important, we've said it in the first segment, we'll say it again, there are three different forms of this cancer, and it's important for you to be able to know what you're working with and then work very, very closely with the doctors. You know, before we went on the commercial break, we talked very briefly about this body, mind, soul aspect of the healing part of it, and so much of what we deal with is that psychological part, and we can awfulize or we can get caught up in the fear, which then really changes the chemistry of the body in a way that it can put it into that state of fight or flight. And I'm sure, doctor, that that has a big impact on how open a person is, number one, to hearing what options they have, and number two, what different therapies are available to them. Isn't that correct?
Well, that's absolutely correct. Ralph's and my motivation for trying to make this book more accessible to a broader audience is partly born out of the frustrations I face. And because when people come to me with a diagnosis of prostate cancer, they have a lot of preconceived notions about what cancer is, and sometimes they're just shaking like a leaf. They're so frightened. And it's very, very difficult to learn under those circumstances. The fear just causes paralysis of the brain. So we had hoped to make an entertaining and accessible story that the general public could start to pick up on how different prostate cancer is and start to diffuse some of these fears about the diagnosis of prostate cancer so that when and if that time comes, and there's 200,000 men every year that face this, that they'll be prepared to some degree and realize that this is indeed different from the other cancers and it's nowhere near as dangerous. But if you look at my day-to-day practice in seeing patients, I feel that fully 50% of my energies are reassuring, trying to calm people down, tell them to come in, the water's okay, and finding limited success. Fear is very difficult to combat.
It is, and especially, you know, the stories and the, you know, people that have had different types of cancer, and again, you know, we probably all three of us sound like a broken record, but we're going to do this one more time. Prostate cancer is different than other cancers, and that is important for all of us, you know, to remember that that's the case. You know, it's so important for that rapport, isn't it, doctor?
Yeah, I mean, if you can get people to calm down and start looking at the facts, then there's a lot of reassurance there. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't challenges and difficulties. The treatments are pretty scary, and that's why this is one of the few cancers that that some men can safely watch without treatment. And that, of course, protects or limits them from some of the dangerous treatments like surgery or radiation, which can ruin your sex life and create all kinds of difficulties with your urinary function. So I don't mean to minimize the impact of this problem. It is a big impact. But many people's fears are misplaced. They think that they're going to die, and the reality is that a relatively small percentage of men face that. But the concerns about over-treatment and the side effects of treatment are much bigger than they are with other cancers.
Exactly. And, you know, with the field of psychoneuroimmunology that really started in the late 70s, early 80s, has done a tremendous amount of research to show the impact of our thoughts and emotions on the well-being of not only the cells of the body, but the immune system. And I know that you quote in your book some information that's shared by Dr. Bruce Lipton, a friend of mine, and that, you know, in his research, what he's found in this connection between this self-hexing, as you call it, the effect, and then also how that can continue to change the chemistry of the body and then can ultimately change the well-being not only of the cells themselves but of the immune system. So, Ralph, when you talked about the fact that we really, when we're looking at this healing, psycho-spiritual healing model, it is putting together all of these pieces, creating all of these teams, and going in and really kind of knowing thyself, as those ancient metaphysicians would say, that that was the key to so much of the healing.
And well, you know, one of the great eye-openers for me was a statement by, simple-sounding statement by Deepak Chopra. He said, every cell in your body is eavesdropping on your thoughts. And I thought, whoa, that's what's happening. So every thought we have is sending a particular message to the immune system. It's either saying, you know, be in fear and go for protection, or be in love and do well. And that's what I call emotional chemical text messages. We're sending them to ourselves all the time. So I would say, if you get nothing else from this talk, think twice before you get nasty. Think twice before you get scared. If you're doing it, start with saying, oh, wow, here I am, falling into scared again. Stop it. My immune system is going to throw up. You know, Bruce talks about the body being a petri dish with a skin over it. All these cells are listening for a fight or flight order. And if that happens, then there's protection, but no healing. The immune system is a great joy to me. I think if it took prostate cancer to get me to where I want to know more about my immune system, I welcome it. It's a cheap price to pay.
You know, it is absolutely phenomenal in the way that we are designed in the anatomy and physiology, that even with thoughts and emotions and stress and lifestyles of food, the habits that we have, the human body is constantly seeking its own place of healing and balance. And the where you find that so much, of course, is in the immune system, in the fact that it still, no matter when it even becomes very, very weakened, it's still trying to do what it's designed to do. So I share that same respect that you have with the immune system itself and the importance of it. And I think that a lot of the aspect of dealing with any form of cancer, but specifically when we're talking today about prostate cancer, I believe, Mark, that it has a lot to do with the way that that diagnosis and that information is delivered. Isn't that correct?
Well, there's a yes. I mean, it's so tragic when not only are people delivered, you know, brutal predictions about the future, it's even more tragic when they aren't even true. You know, a lot of the when you have surgeons handling such a sensitive area of men's lives, their sexuality, and this is the last place you'd think we'd want to put surgeons in charge. But it's been that way for 100 years, and some things just are what they are. And the surgeons are desensitized. They cut, you know, they're using sharp instruments to cut into human flesh all day long. And so these little trivial things like a little emotional pain to them seem like nothing at all. Mm-hmm. Well, but these things can be shattering to someone who's, you know, thinks that they have a life-threatening illness, that they've been told they have cancer. So, the impact that it can have, you know, on your emotional makeup, your immune system, your overall health, it's really just a terrible thing that we've left this in the hands of surgeons.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I remember suddenly something said by an amazing woman, Janet Quinn. She was a PhD in RN.
Oh, I know Janice very well.
Well, back in 1976, she said, you know, the surgery may be necessary and the drug may be necessary. They may be necessary to help remove barriers to self-healing. What an interesting idea. But they're not sufficient in and of themselves to present the healing. And, you know, we know of patients who die despite a successful surgery. I mean, how do you explain that, guys? Something else is in this formula, and I think the emotional, spiritual aspect of it really can be helpful at this point.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of Dr. Larry Dossey's work has been, you know, this power of word, the power of affirmations,
yep.
And, you know, the fact that so much of my work, I deal with work with so many oncologists, and, you know, I hope I fluff you up, Mark, as I talk to you, but oncologists really have a deep respect for that human emotion, for that life, and for that body that fights so diligently and so gallantly to be able to sustain itself. And, you know, when some doctor says, well, you go to an oncologist, you get to touch death on a regular basis. So there's a tremendous understanding and respect for it and the grace that's associated with it. And I think that's part of the skill that oncologists brings to that whole healing process. Even though somebody says they have cancer, oh my gosh, I'm going to an oncologist. In my world of working with doctors, I say, boy, there isn't anybody better to work with to really understand what we are really dealing with, not only from that physical part, but that whole emotional part. So I hope I fluffed you up on that one, but that's how I feel.
Well, we need to make a point here, though, that prostate cancer is the only type of cancer where medical oncologists aren't routinely involved.
Yeah.
This is the only remaining cancer. If you think of breast, colon, lung, leukemia, whatever, medical oncologists are expected to be in charge of the process. But in the field of prostate cancer, to this day, at USC and UCLA, the local universities, they don't train medical oncologists in early-stage prostate cancer. Only the urologists do it. And this is the root cause of some of the problems. In Ralph's and my book, we tried to gather together all the oncologists, medical oncologists that we could find in the whole United States that have some connection to prostate cancer, some claim to specialization in prostate cancer. And we came up with only 60 names.
There are out of 15,000.
Yes, yeah. And there are over 2 million living prostate cancer survivors.
Yeah.
Only 60 medical oncologists in the whole United States.
The list is in the back of the book.
Yeah, I was going to just say, thank you for doing that, Ralph. I was going to say not only just the information in the book, but the extent that you have gone to research and to be able to offer people list of oncologists and different places that they can go, different information that they can read. It's just, it really is, you know, and then also I found so helpful was your glossary and the things that you had talked about that, you know, most of us lay people go in and we don't even know what all this is. So it's for all of the listeners, it's a well thought out book. Not only does it present, you know, from that kind of what we call that conventional process, but the holism of it, the body-mind-soul connection. And then it's a resource guide that you will want to keep on your shelf, whether you have to deal with it with a husband or brother, partner, whatever. It's a good source for you to have because this does touch a lot of men's lives. And you can just go in and you can just share this book. It's very, very well done that way.
And one of the things I had a lot of fun with is Mark has a full practice. I mean, he'll sometimes do 12-hour days. I took on the annotated bibliography and really wrote about each of the books that I respected. And each of us put a mark at the end of the review. Mark put a doctor's D and I put a patient's P. And I really enjoyed doing it, and I learned a lot, and this is probably the best annotated bibliography I've ever seen. I mean, just your friend Bruce Lipton, right?
Correct.
I said, Lipton is a cell biologist and epigeneticist. He's one of those rare people who is best described as an adventurer in ideas. You needn't have cancer to benefit from his creative thinking.
Absolutely, and, you know, Bruce Lipton is a Hay House author, as I am, any of you are interested in Bruce's book, you can certainly go to hayhouse.com. But again, I think it's this holism of what we're really, really looking at. In the book, you do mention some of the integrative approaches that are out there, the traditional oriental medicine, light therapy. We go to the physical part, lifestyle changes, and so forth. But that was another thing that I found is that it really offered someone at least a place to start. This is what it is. This is what you know, can be expected. So one of the things that I found is this ozone therapy. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? Because I think my listeners would find that really an interesting process.
I don't know what to think of ozone therapy. I've said everything I can in the book about it and from my own experience of it. And there are, you know, it doesn't go through the FDA. It's a, it's one of those outrigger canoe things. So I don't know what to add. I found it very interesting.
Yeah,
I don't know if I had benefit from it.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think that's a good point, Ralph, with what both you and Mark did in the book, is that you offered people snippets, is the best probably way to say, of the different things that are available. And again, it's like, you know, if we were to go and look at using, you know, any kind of prescription or chemotherapy, one size doesn't necessarily fit all. I think that's the theme that I found so consistent through the entire book is, there's options, and that one size doesn't fit all. And if you don't benefit, Ralph, from ozone therapy, it doesn't mean it's bad. It just didn't maybe match
that
where you
too.
Were in it.
That's right. And I think one of the things Mark has done, which is really significant and saving time and effort and heartening, is to point to the bright future of immune therapy and molecular biology
yes.
and new drug combinations and research in nanoparticle delivery of prostate cancer medications and promising new treatment methods in the pipeline now. And, you know, I'm convinced that of all the cancers, this is a great one.
Well, it really is. And, you know, as a female, I have to jump in on this female part. On the female aspect of it, you know, the words that a man hears that you have prostate cancer, when a female hears you have breast cancer, there's the same aspect. We do get oncologists involved in that part of it to some extent, depending on where it is and its different stages. But I think that as I was reading this from not only a wife perspective and a daughter perspective, but I thought, you know, if this is really true in prostate, then maybe it's true also in breast cancer. Maybe there are different degrees. Maybe there are things that we can do. And what I found is that it gave me a peace of mind, not only with family, but it gave me a peace of mind within myself. Look at where we're going. Medicine is not as rigid and is not as authoritarian as it has been. Everything is evolving and changing.
I've got to tell you, I had my first experience with a mammogram taught me a lot, because you sometimes get breast cancer, and particularly if you do hormone blockade and you get some breast growth. After my first mammogram, I thought, God, you know, you'd have to be a woman to put up with this. So the second time I went, I didn't mind the squeezing and all that, but I took a thin strip of fabric to put between my boob and the metal plate. And if I were a woman, I'd bloody well do that every time. I'm going to have that experience.
Well, I'll tell you, for all of us women that are the listening audience, you know, that's a darn good idea.
You bet it is.
So,
and you've got to, and you know, you could say, well, why doesn't my tech do that? Well, you can't, because you can't use the same piece of fabric for more than one woman. But get your own, roll it up like your little mat that you'd take for yoga, and take it with you. He says, "What's this?" I say, "It's my anti-metal plate insulator." You guys don't respect my boobs, I do. So that I wouldn't have learned without prostate cancer.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and when we were looking at this, Mark, going back, is, you know, one of the things I found also is that, you know, it isn't just this testosterone dynamics that necessarily means that a male is going to get prostate cancer. I mean, you looked at the insulin connection. You looked at so many different connections in the book that really can, you know, diet, supplements, different things that can that can benefit but can also contribute. And I thought that was very helpful.
It seems that in the United States we're so well fed that even our prostate cancers grow better. In the Far East, the incidence of prostate cancer is 18 times lower. It's absolutely amazing the difference that a diet can make.
Absolutely. Well, and that's one of the things as females is that if we're diagnosed with breast cancer, the first thing we do is get off of sugar, because that glucose-insulin dynamics,
yep.
you know, can feed those little happy cancer cells, and then it depletes the others. So just absolutely phenomenal. One of the things that I want to do before we close, please tell us, where can we buy your book?
I think it's available at all the usual outlets, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Do you know, Ralph, are there any other tricks to getting the book?
We used to say in the old days, better bookstores everywhere. But, you know, if you go in and they don't have it, ask for it. And you know what's wrong with Kindle and that stuff? I finally figured it out. You can't underline. You can't make notes on the page. So you get it for $6 less or $12. So what?
That is the truth, and that's one of the things that I will say to everybody. Yes, Kindle does have its place, but when you're going to get a good book that you're going to keep on your shelves for a reference guide, you are going to want to mark this with yellow pen, annotate it, and do everything else. Absolutely.
Well, Carol, you know, the other day someone looked at me rather sharply and said, so, you know, I bought your book. What do you think I ought to come away with after reading it?
Oh.
And I thought about that for a while, and I guess it's, first of all, a feeling that the promise we made on the cover is being kept, that the invasion is being repulsed, that increasing emphasis is being placed on quality of life, that we will continue to see a steady decline in unnecessary everything, you know, biopsies, invasive treatment, and all forms of collateral damage. And finally, what I'd like to see people feel afterward and come away with is that Mark and I have accomplished what we set out to do, which is to write a book that informs you, entertains you, calms your fears, and leaves you with good reasons for hope.
Absolutely, and I think that a perfect way for us, oh, before I go, is there a website? Do either of you have websites where any of my listeners can go to learn more about you, learn more about the book?
I founded a nonprofit educational foundation called the Prostate Cancer Research Institute about 13 years ago. The web address is pcri.org, or you can just type in prostate cancer on a Google search, prostate cancer research on a Google search. And there's about 5,000 pages of information there, so it would provide a lot of info for people who need help with prostate cancer.
Well, I want to thank both of you for joining me today.
I'm glad you didn't ask me, by the way, because I don't have one. I'm hiding out.
But see, what a team the two of you are.
I will do something, since I trust that you're being the kind of person you are and having the kind of show you do, that your audience is fairly high-minded and sympathetic and courteous. I will give you my email address, so if there's anybody out there who really needs to know something, I'll put up with that. It's blum 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 twice@earthlink.net. That's a really stupid thing to do, because it sort of opens you up, but I trust that goodwill is generally found on a show like this.
Well, and thank you very much for those words. They are very, very special listeners. So what I would like to do is I would like to thank you once again. Please, all of you that are listening to this show, you can go back and you can re-listen to what the doctor and what Ralph had to say about prostate cancer in my archives. I encourage you to go to my website, www.ritberger.com. When you go there, you can go to Radio Archives. You can download it to computer, put it on your iPod, and carry the three of us with you. Share it with your friends. Burn it to a CD. Wonderful, wonderful information.
Carol, I understand that you can also leave your comments on Amazon, what you think of the book. That's really good for other people to find. I've seen a couple of comments which were really informative.
Absolutely, and that is something. If you go in, I know I will, if you go in and you read this book and you want to do a review and your comments on it, by all means, because one of the things with, you know, books like this is sometimes there has to be a need to be able to move it along.
Yeah.
But I think that what we're talking about is we're not talking so much, I know the book's on prostate, we're talking about a shift in consciousness, a way to psycho-spiritually look at this. And again, I go back. Put together a healing team that you have rapport, that you have trust, and on that healing team, instead of this alternative where we pit ourselves against medicine, let's bring medicine into the fold, let's utilize what they bring to us, and let's take all this information, and then we can make very, very healthy choices and healing choices. I want to thank all of you for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure. I'll be back next Wednesday morning. Thank you again, and you have a wonderful week. I'll see you on the radio.
You've been listening to The Carol Reiberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.reiberger.com. That's www.reiberger.com. See you soon.